This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Across the Jets line, Niederreiter moving in, let a shot go and score. Niederreiter at center ice. He is taken out along the boards by Trouba, but continues in toward the corner. Got the puck again, got it to the side of the net, they score. Stomping out of his own zone, skipping towards center is Dumba. Across the line, he slows up, let a wrister go. Stopped by Hellebuck, they score. Here's Spurgeon, up along the wing for Parisi. Backhand shot to the empty net, they score. Zach Parisi will get an empty netter. It is four unanswered in this third for the Wild.
From a 2-0 lead to a 4-2 defeat, it truly was a Black Friday for the Winnipeg Jets in St. Paul, Minnesota.
Just terrible.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by my colleagues Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. You can reach us here in studio at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to do it. And, of course, our website, which has all the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio, is illegalcurve.com. Just terrible. I believe my colleague, Mr. Ginsberg, was referring to my opening, not the play of the Winnipeg Jets in the third period last night, but just terrible could certainly describe the Jets' collapse in St. Paul from a 2-0 down to a 4-2 defeat, as I mentioned, Ezzy.
Yeah, and you know, the Minnesota Wild are a very good team. I mean, they entered this game ahead of the Jets in the Central Division, second, and obviously you got the Preds there in first. Obviously, a big collapse there in the third period. I should mention that I didn't watch this game live. I was at a wedding. Got to give a big shout-out to my really good friend, our really good friend, Hart, and Jackie, who celebrated their wedding last night. So I only caught the highlights, and you know, I was surprised. I looked at my phone and it was 2-0 Jets after two periods. And then I looked at the phone, you know, after the game and it was 4-2. So obviously it was kind of thinking to myself, okay, what went wrong here? Caught the highlights and you knew that the Wild were going to have a pushback there in the third period. And, you know, guys, we have to mention this is the first time these two teams have played since the first round.
Mm-hmm.
And you knew that the Wild wanted to get the better of the Jets, Dave, based on how that first round went last year. The Jets completely dominated that first round series against the Wild. The Wild got the one win, but the Wild were never in that series. And I think it's telling that there were four different goal scorers in that third period, because this is not a Wild team that depends on one line, like the Colorado Avalanche, or, you know, we saw with the New Jersey Devils, right? Really depend on guys like Taylor Hall, Kyle Palmieri, Nico Hischier. I mean, this is a group that scores by committee.
Mm-hmm.
Quite frankly, I'm surprised that the Wild are doing this well. I mean, I expected the Wild to be competitive for a playoff spot, but they're playing really well, especially at home. What are they, 8-2-2 right now at home, Drew? And Eric Staal, even though everybody was expecting a regression this year, based on the highlights, I mean, Eric Staal was all over the ice, and obviously, you know, he had an impact on the score sheet. Nino Niederreiter, only his third goal of the season. Connor Hellebuck, I think, would like to have that goal back. Obviously, the Eric Fehr goal, you know, was a bit of puck luck there. Just an unfortunate bounce. Eric Fehr kind of whacks at it. Mm-hmm. It goes past Hellebuck. But unfortunately, these last two games, one period has led to their undoing. And again, yeah. I didn't watch the whole game, but it looked like it was going pretty well the first two periods.
Well, the penalty kill was the story of the first two periods for the Jets, as they managed to kill off, I believe it was, you know, six penalties in the course of the entire game. But the Wild, certainly, Dave, had their opportunities on the power play early in the game when, you know, it was 0-0, and then Laine scored for the Jets in the late in the first period to make it 1-0, and then Ehlers late in the second period to make it 2-0. And the Jets are feeling good about themselves. And then in the third period, the team looked hesitant. They looked tentative. And people have been talking, sort of comparing this third period to the third period in Toronto back a couple weeks ago before they went to Finland. And the difference is that third period in Toronto, I think, the team, they were on the second half of a back-to-back, if you recall correctly, and they were playing their third game in four nights when they collapsed against the Leafs. Last night against Minnesota, they weren't on a back-to-back. They played Monday, they played Wednesday, they played Friday. So sure, you know, it's been three games in the course of the week, but I don't think the tired factor should have been an issue last night. The Jets just didn't seem like they knew how to play with the lead, which isn't something we saw last year when they were very good at sort of stepping on an opponent when they had them down in the third period.
Also the game against Edmonton.
Sure, game against Edmonton.
They did have a good third period.
Yeah. To that point, our good friend Mike McIntyre from the Winnipeg Free Press tweeted out that the Jets have taken a lead into the third period 10 times And of those 10 times, they've only won six of those games. Two they've lost in regulation. Two they've lost in either an OT or a shootout. From the Jets' perspective, I mean, you know, that's not a good percentage. You know, when you're winning in the third period, you know, you generally want to be able to, you know, good teams are able to lock it down and stay focused. Now the fact of the matter is that, you know, we still think the Jets are a good team. I still think this is just a bit of a hiccup. You know, the game against Calgary, obviously, and then this game today, or yesterday, sorry, in Minnesota. But, you know, it's definitely something you have to factor in. I mean, look, Minnesota came out. I'd say they started to play better in the second period. Connor Hellebuyck was good in the first couple of periods. Mm-hmm. Then they had the letdown, and as he just touched on, you know, he would definitely want that Niederreiter back and goal back. And you know, kudos to the Wild. We're talking about how they're getting contributions from everybody, but those first two goals that get them back in the game are from their fourth line.
Yeah.
So think about how critical that is, getting two goals from your fourth line to be able to get yourself back into a hockey game. And then Eric Staal, you know, of course, we know what he can do. And then Zach Parise finishes it off with the empty netter. So from my perspective, it was a game that the Jets really should have won because you're up 2-0. And, you know, you should be engaged in that game. That's against the divisional opponent. They were at the time 2 points ahead of you. You had two games in hand. You know, it's an emotional game. Andrew Kopp gets knocked out after a hard hit into the board from JT Brown. And then, you know, of course, you have the incident where Adam Lowry goes with the high hit elbow. And then it leads to that melee in the,
on the Jets bench. Old school 1970s
style. Oh, yeah, that was very entertaining.
I expected to see Mike Milbury hitting somebody with a shoe very, very quickly thereafter.
But you know what? A lot of players were trying. Some players, it's interesting how your perspective changes, right? The Jets players were trying to suggest it was just another game, one of 82, whereas the Wild players after the game were talking about how it had a playoff feel. So I guess depending on how your perspective is, the outcome was, that's how you talked about the game. But again, you can see that there's everybody talks about how you need a playoff series to develop, and you mentioned it, Drew, to develop that kind of disdain for one another, and I think we saw it throughout periods of that game last night.
And right now, the way the Central Division is shaking out, and I mean, certainly lots of time left and a lot of things can change, but the Jets and the Wild very well could play again in the first round of the playoffs, you know, come April. Now, obviously, we're not going to prognosticate that far in advance because it's way too soon in the season, but these are two rivals. You mentioned the need to play when you play in division, you play a playoff round, that's when the hate begins to develop. And the Wild, I think, really, they were down 2-0 in this game. They're embarrassed from the playoffs last year where the Jets absolutely, to your point, as he dominated them. And so once the Jets gave them a little bit of breathing room, once Hellebuyck lets in that goal from Niederreiter to make it 2-1 and the Wild have a little bit of life, it seemed just the ice tilted. The Jets were on their heels. They couldn't get anything going. They couldn't make any plays to begin to, you know, tamper down the enthusiasm of the Wild, and then they get that sort of garbage goal, and then they get, you know, the goal to that's eventually the game-winning goal after Hellebuyck can't handle the puck. It's just the Wild snowball. The snowball effect in the third period was profound last night.
Right, and I think it's easy to blame Connor Hellebuyck for this loss, but again, and I didn't watch the game, but watching the highlights and, you know, hearing other people that were watching the game talk about the game, Hellebuyck was excellent the first two periods. So obviously, you know, one or two of those goals, you know, maybe Hellebuyck would like to have back, but this is not on Hellebuyck. To me, the Jets are not playing confidently in their own zone. And it goes back to the Calgary game. We haven't talked about the Calgary game, but come on, Drew. I mean, that was the worst first period for the Jets of the season, easily.
Right, probably the last couple of years. I mean, it was embarrassing
and
that
just,
first period.
The crazy part about that is that that was a game that they were one disallowed goal from being well within, which is just
right.
To show you the talent level of this team. But
and it's not one or two players. You know, I realize Tyler Myers has become a bit of a whipping boy here, and you know, Myers had a rough game against Calgary, but this Jets team is one of the best defensive teams in the league. And they've allowed 8 goals the last 2 games. I'm not including the empty netters. I mean, there's 10 goals, but non-empty net goals,
yeah,
right?
Which is way too many for a team that, you know, coming into this week, you're absolutely right, Ezzie.
Right.
And it's not like they played.
It's uncharacteristic. Yeah. What I'm saying is the way the Jets have been playing on this road trip is uncharacteristic. Making those mistakes, you know, having difficulty with coverage in their own zone. They've looked a little bit unstructured, in my opinion, at times in their own zone. And I think going back to your point, I think, you know, this isn't something that we saw last year. The Jets, if the Jets had a 2-goal lead, forget it, a 2-goal lead. If the Jets had a 1-goal lead, there was almost an 80% chance that the Jets were going to close that game out.
They were able to lock it down. And they haven't been able to do that this year at all. I mean, even going back to the game against Vancouver on Monday, which, I mean, it was an entertaining game just because it was so sloppy and But it's not like the Jets played overwhelmingly well, I think, in their own zone, especially against Vancouver. There's problems on the team. Now, there's problems on the team, and the team is still 12-7-2. So it's not that the sky is falling, and that's, you know, sort of Blake Wheeler addressed that, I think, mentioned those comments last night in his postgame. The team just isn't clicking at all cylinders right now. And they came back from Finland, and they had the very good homestand going 3-0-1 on home ice last week. And they've headed out on the road, and they haven't played that well. But truthfully, if they beat the St. Louis Blues tonight, and both teams are coming off of a back-to-back, the Blues, you know, handed the Nashville Predators really their worst loss of the season last night. I think it was a 6-2 final. The Blues were victorious. If the Jets are able to pull off the win tonight, then it's a 2-2 road trip and things aren't so bad. You know, Mike, you mentioned Mike McIntyre, Dave, and he had an interesting tweet late last night about the Jets' record against the upper echelon teams in the NHL. And let me see if I can find it right now. The Jets have played 8 games against teams currently in the top 15 in the NHL. 2-5-1 in those 8 games against the top 15. 10-2-1 against the bottom 16 teams in the league. So they're beating up on bad teams, but they're struggling right now against good teams in the NHL, which is something I think worth keeping an eye on. I don't think that's going to continue. I think the Jets will get their victories against the better teams in the NHL. But right now, the Jets are doing all their damage against teams that they should beat, which I guess is a compliment to them that they're winning the games they should win. But some of those other games is where they're struggling. When we come back, we're going to talk more about tonight's Jets-Blues contest. You're listening to Birchwood Nissan Infinity Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Truba in on the forecheck. Gets it for Scheifele. Scheifele takes it behind the Blues net. In for Connor. Truba scores! Jacob Truba!
That was back in October, the last time the Jets and Blues met. Another game where the Jets blew, they were down significantly, and they came back to eventually tie the Blues. They had an epic comeback in that game, if you recall correctly, until Jacob Truba won it for the Jets in overtime as the Jets defeated their divisional rival St. Louis Blues for the second time on the season. This is their third meeting of the year later on tonight here on TSN Radio 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity Winnipeg Jets Game Day here on the station. And of course, this segment of the show is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. As I mentioned tonight, the Jets and the Blues, a game you can hear live on the station. St. Louis Blues made a coaching change earlier this week, and you sort of felt as though this was going to, it was sort of inevitable. You know, they had been struggling under Mike Yeo for a lot of the season.
I'm pretty sure Ezzy tweeted it like 10 minutes before it happened. He said, is this Mike Yeo's last night?
Because they lost 2-0 last Monday night to the Los Angeles Kings. And so basically, if you lose to the Kings, you're automatically getting fired.
Asked the question, right? My tweet was, if St. Louis loses this game, is Yeo fired tomorrow? And not only was he fired, he was fired immediately after the game.
Yeah, exactly. Which you just, I mean, nobody really batted an eye at it. You just felt it was inevitable. He talked about his own coaching future, you know, a few weeks back when the team was struggling. And Craig Berube is brought in as the interim coach, and they lost their first game to the Predators on Wednesday. And then in the second half of the back-to-back, they defeated the Preds last night by a 6-2 margin to improve to 8-10-3 on the season, which is still good for last place in the Central Division. So the St. Louis Blues are looking to get Craig Berube to jumpstart their season. And, you know, I'm surprised. I thought the Blues had a great offseason, but it has not translated on the ice to any success this year. But maybe they're feeling good about themselves after last night's victory over the Predators, and they might want to not drop the first 3 games against the Jets of the season tonight when they play in St. Louis.
Yeah, and Drew, you mentioned the offseason changes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Ryan O'Reilly has panned out exactly how they thought he was going to pan out. O'Reilly's been fantastic.
Yeah.
And, you know, you mentioned they're last in the Central Division. The biggest problem for the Blues is they have to go on a run here at this point in the season. They can't wait till game 40 or game 50 like they did last year, right? It's kind of a similar situation, but almost the opposite. Because if you remember, this time last year, the Blues were actually first in the Central.
They started very well last year. They had a terrible swoon.
Right.
And then they played better after they traded Paul Stastny to the Jets. When all the pressure was off, they made it all the way to game 82, where they lost the Avalanche to fall just out of the playoffs.
Right. And, you know, some of the other players they acquired, obviously, you know, a guy like Tyler Bozak, you know, David Perron on the third line. Actually, their entire third line were guys that were acquired in the offseason. Patrick Maroon's the other guy that they like to use on that third line. But, you know, when I watch this Blues team, Dave, the thing that stands out to me is something that we've seen from the Blues over the years. Because as the Blues have kind of, you know, gone from a perennial Stanley Cup contender, and teams like the Jets and the Preds have gotten better, the Blues have gotten slower. And if you look at the players they've acquired, I mean, Patrick Maroon, last time I checked, is not Nikolaj Ehlers.
He's not fast. He's a big power forward.
Right. And last time I checked, Tyler Bozak is not Jack Roslovic. I mean, the point is, I mean, this is not a fast team. And when you watch the Blues against the Jets, it's evident the Jets are a much quicker team. Now, the Blues have talent. I mean, Vladdy Tarasenko, I expected more goals at this point in the season from Vladdy Tarasenko. I think he has maybe 5 or 6 goals right now. You know, this is a 40-goal scorer.
Yeah, he's struggling. I mean, he's still got 6 goals now. He's got 17 points in 21 games. But Elliot Friedman, I think, wrote about it in his 31 Thoughts this week. The Blues organization just isn't thrilled with his performance. If you remember that game...
Well, he's making big dough, and he's on pace for 24 goals. I mean, this is a guy that you expect at least 35 goals out of. This is your number one sniper.
Should be an 80. He should be a point-a-game guy.
Well, he's uber-talented. I mean, Tarasenko's a great player. And, you know, when I watched this team as well... You know, the staple of this team for years, I mean, this is, you know, going back 10 years, longer than that, has been goaltending and defense. And, you know, the writing, I think, was on the wall a little bit for the Blues start when Jay Bouwmeester, former NHL Ironman, was a healthy scratch.
Yeah. And he was a healthy scratch in Winnipeg, if I recall correctly. Yeah.
Well, and Bouwmeester's a guy that obviously is not the same player he was 5 years ago or 4 years ago. This is a guy that was on the Canadian Olympic team with Alex Pietrangelo. But, you know, you watch the Blues defense, and I actually have been, you know, pretty impressed by a guy like Vince Dunn. I don't believe he played last night, but, you know, Jordan Schmaltz is a good defenseman, but Colton Parayko, Alex Pietrangelo, I mean, this is not a fast group of defensemen, and in this day and age, you have to be able to move the puck, and the Blues are kind of still playing that kind of heavy style of hockey a little bit, and they've moved away from it a little bit, but, you know, that to me is a flaw of this team that Doug Armstrong has not addressed. He hasn't added speed, even though you have a lot of skill up and down the lineup, and I also think, Drew, you know, to mention, I want to get Dave in here, but I think, you know, there has to be something said about all of the change and how that has affected this Blues group. I mean, there's been a lot of turnover in this lineup, but they've brought in guys like Robert Thomas and Jordan Kyrou, both high draft picks. Kyrou's in the American Hockey League now, but Robert Thomas recently scored his first NHL goal. I mean, there's a lot of new faces, and I think, you know, maybe the chemistry issue has been there, and they haven't really found a lot of flow. There's not really one line that Mike Yeo was able to go to and know that that line was, you know, going to drive the bus offensively.
Well, you talk about their lines, and your point is right. Ryan O'Reilly, you know, playing with Tarasenko and Zachary Sanford. Well, O'Reilly's brand new to the, this is his first year with the organization. You know, Braden Schenn, Robert Thomas, and Robbie Fabry. Well, Fabry's been injured for most of last year. He missed the majority of last season. Braden Schenn's only been there for one season. Robert Thomas is a rookie. You know, the third line is entirely brand new of Perron, Bozak, and Maroon, all of whom were acquired this offseason. And then your fourth line is, you know, Barbashev, Soshnikov, and Samuel Blais. So, I mean, your fourth line is your fourth line. You're not going to rely too much on them. You know, your point is well taken, Ezzy, that these guys are not terribly familiar with one another, and there might still be some growing pains as they try and figure out how they're going to play and what kind of style they want to play when they are sort of a retro team, a throwback team, compared to the speed teams of this generation, Dave.
Yeah, and you know, Craig Berube, we all remember him as a player. I mean, he was a tough, physical kind of guy, so he's, you know, and he's a hardworking type of coach, and he'll probably be instilling that in this team. And, you know, the Achilles heel for the St. Louis Blues for the last number of years has been the goaltending, obviously. I mean, we know that Jake Allen hasn't been, you know, who they thought he was going to be, and their defense, as he touched on already, has not been as elite as it had been in the past. And so now when you're at that situation, you've got a team that, unfortunately for the St. Louis Blues and their fans in St. Louis, you know, is hard-pressed to keep the puck out of the net when you've got teams like Winnipeg and, you know, Minnesota and Nashville, exception being last night, obviously, where they only allowed two goals, and one of them was a late goal. But, I mean, that's going to be the key. I mean, we saw it here for years in Winnipeg. It doesn't matter how good your team is. If at the back at the net you're not stopping the puck, well, then it's pretty hard to have for the team to have confidence and to feel that they can play the kind of game they need to play when they just don't have that faith that the goalie is going to make the stops. And, you know, we've seen that. We saw it here when Jake Allen was left off that trip last year to come to Winnipeg. Mm-hmm. That, you know, that's a bit of a the Achilles heel right now of this team. If he can get it turned around, and as you guys touched on, this team can start to gel with all the new faces in it, then, you know, as long as you maintain a pace, then you're always within striking distance, because you don't know what's going to happen, you know, injury-wise to other teams, that which could drop them out of the, you know, contention. So from St. Louis's perspective, I mean, it hasn't been a good start. You're hoping the coaching change from there. They're hoping that the coaching change is going to be enough to do something. And it's funny when you hear players talk after a coaching change, because they say, oh, well, you know, we don't like to see that happen. Well, of course, but the organization, of course, does that because they can't fire all the players.
Yeah.
So they have to do something to change the voice. They do that. And then at that point, the players know, similar to what we saw here in Winnipeg, you can't blame the coach anymore. It's on you because you have a new coach.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290 as part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity Winnipeg Jets game day. We're talking about the Jets and the Blues. A 6 o'clock puck drop here tonight on TSN 1290. I'd expect for the Blues that Chad Johnson is going to get the call in net, as Jake Allen played last night for the Blues against the Predators. He played well, which you can't say very often for Jake Allen this year, as he does have a sub 900 save percentage and a goals against average over 3.2. So I'd expect Chad Johnson, who's certainly been the better of the two goaltenders, to get the start for the Blues. I mean, is it time to give up on Jake Allen at this point, Ezzy?
Well,
is it clear that he can't be a number 1A guy, that in his best case scenario, he has to be sort of in a job share with somebody else?
Well, you almost wonder if they kept the wrong guy. You're looking at Carter Hutton and what he's doing with Buffalo, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, he's having a great start to the season, but, you know, Jake Allen's numbers have actually been really good over the last, you know, 4 or 5 games. You know, they had the big win over the Vegas Golden Knights. I think he had 32 saves in that game. And then even though they lost to the LA Kings, he was obviously, you know, really sharp in that game. He only allowed one goal, right? So Jake Allen is, you look at his numbers, you know, 3 weeks ago, they were much worse. Don't get me wrong, his numbers are not good, but, you know,
this is an improvement on his bad numbers.
His last 4 or 5 starts have been pretty solid. So, you know, he's starting to play some better hockey, but, you know, Chad Johnson's actually been a pretty capable backup. And yeah, just because Allen played last night, I mean, we're expecting it to be Lauren Brossoit for the Jets and Chad Johnson for the Blues, but
I wouldn't be shocked if it's Hellebuck again tonight. You know, something about the way Paul Maurice was talking, the fact that, you know, Hellebuck got that unexpected night off in Calgary after playing poorly. I wouldn't be shocked if for some reason Paul Maurice goes back to Hellebuck tonight.
It's possible, but based on
historical precedent,
you know, you expect it to be Lauren Brossoit, just because most NHL coaches don't like to have their goalies go back-to-back, Drew. But
sure.
Yeah, it's possible. I'm not going to disagree with you, because I think it's based on how the last couple of starts have gone for Hellebuck.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, he only played, you know, what did he play? It was 15 minutes.
In Calgary.
Right, because then Brossoit came in late in the first period. So it's possible we see Bucky tonight.
Dave, what do you think?
You know, Dave, just before you get in here, because Drew asked about Jake Allen. I mean, this is a huge year for Jake Allen. And it feels like we've been talking about Jake Allen and whether he can be a number one goaltender for 3 years now, mm-hmm, since Brian Elliott left there. And, you know, he's got to prove it, because, you know, the thing is with Chad Johnson, with all of his veteran experience, and the Blues, you know, to Dave's point about Craig Berube coming in, I mean, he was the assistant coach. It's not like they brought in a brand new head coach and they're going to completely change the way they're playing. It's not like in Edmonton, you know, that Ken Hitchcock is going to try to instill a little bit more of a defensive structure, mm-hmm, into the way the Oilers are playing. I mean, it's the players on the ice that are going to have to get it done. It's Vladimir Tarasenko, it's Alex Steen, it's Ryan O'Reilly, it's, you know, Tyler Bozak, Alex Petrangelo, Jay Bouwmeester, and Jake Allen, arguably the most important player. I mean, if he starts to play a lot better and continue to play actually the way he's played, because he has been very good, as I mentioned, the last week or so, you know, the Blues maybe can make a run. I just think it might be too late.
It'll be interesting to see, of course, the Jets and the Blues tonight in action, a game you can hear live on TSN Radio 1290. Before we go to break, and we're going to bring in Luke Korak to talk about the Blues on the other side of the commercials, want to express our condolences to the family of Mick Magoo, former NHL official who'd recently been working as an off-ice supervisor. He was a frequent guest, a frequent visitor, a frequent presence in the press box at Winnipeg Jets games in his role as an officiating supervisor. Very friendly man, very nice man, always had a smile and was always, you know, willing to stop and have a good quality conversation. He passed away earlier this week after suffering a stroke far too soon. Want to express our condolences to the friends and to the family of Mick Magoo. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number one. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. We're part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity. Winnipeg Jets game day. The Jets and the Blues tonight. 6 p.m. puck drop on this fine station. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us here in studio. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend Lou Korak. Lou is the NHL.com correspondent for the St. Louis Blues. Lou, good morning and thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, Lou. Obviously brought you on to talk about the Blues, and it's they got their first victory for new interim head coach Craig Berube last night against the Nashville Predators. Going back to Monday night, the loss to the Los Angeles Kings, and then the dismissal of Mike Yeo as head coach, was there a feeling of inevitability surrounding this move? I mean, it was only a few weeks ago that Mike Yeo sort of spoke very candidly and honestly about his job security. When that loss to the Kings happened, did you sort of get the feeling that this was the natural next step?
Yeah, it was not a good game at all. Goaltending's probably the only aspect of that game that you really couldn't point to anything as being problematic. There just wasn't any flow, no continuity, nothing going right for the St. Louis Blues at that time. You hate to say it, but you almost got the sense that Mike Yeo was kind of on a day-to-day basis going there. I mean, you win a game there, you don't know what's going to happen, but you almost hate to think that you have to win a hockey game in order to have your job the next day. But that's just sort of that was the state of the St. Louis Blues at the time. And, you know, once you lose that game, you get shut out on home ice and another home loss. It was inevitable that something was going to happen. And, you know, you guys know as well as I do that you can't fire an entire team, even though they deserved it after that performance. And, Mike Yeo paid the price for the team's shortcomings so far, and it was a smooth transition over to Craig Berube, with him on staff already. The players have some familiarity there, and the Blues are going to try to get this thing turned around. But when you look at it, it was a tough stretch here for Berube to start. You get home and home with Nashville, and then back-to-back here tonight with the Jets coming into town. Not the easiest task in the world, but, you had a pretty convincing victory there last night, and, now the challenge for the St. Louis Blues is to try to build on that.
Lou, you mentioned that Craig Berube obviously has the familiarity with the Blues, being the assistant coach. We know he's the interim head coach, but if he is able to turn this around, is it possible that that interim tag is going to be taken off and it's possible that Berube is going to be the head coach going forward here next year and beyond?
It's possible, but I thought it was interesting that at the press conference with the official announcement on Tuesday that Doug Armstrong made it clear that they were going to go into an extensive search, and nothing was guaranteed. They were going to look at all possibilities, whether it be a veteran with experience, somebody over in Europe, a young college coach, even take a look at what Craig Berube's able to do here. So I thought it was interesting that he never really endorsed the fact that he was going to give him full responsibilities, right from the get-go and give him the job right away. But, I guess it's an opportunity for Berube to really audition himself here, see how the team responds to him. And if things go well and if they go on a run here and get themselves back in the playoff hunt where they were expected to be when this season starts, certainly he can get the job. But I think this is going to be this is going to be the one that Doug Armstrong is going to want to absolutely try to get right this time, because, you know, he picked Mike Yeo to be Ken Hitchcock's successor at the time. It was a short stint, maybe not a fair one for Mike Yeo, but here's where we are, and it is what it is now. And Craig Berube's got that chance now to sort of assert himself as the guy. The players, Greg Chen played for him in Philadelphia. The players seem to respect him. A lot of the young guys on this team played for him when he was coach of the Chicago Wolves in 2016-17, and feel that he's a very good communicator with young kids. And I think that's maybe something that this hockey team needs right now with all the young players that they are implementing in their lineup.
You know, Lou, last night the Blues had a big win over the Nashville Predators. Jake Allen was in net, only gave up 2 goals. How much faith did the organization have in him right now?
I think they have more than what's known on the outside. The numbers were pretty deceiving, I'll be honest with you guys. You know, they weren't very good in Jake Allen's favor early on, but the team was just playing so poorly defensively, really hanging him out to dry quite a bit. I know there's that saying among fans where, you know, you'd like to see your goalie, you know, make that big save, and he was giving him big saves, but there was just way too many grade A chances in a lot of these games. And, you know, if you look at the small body of work here in the last couple of weeks, he's really short his game up, save percentage really high, well into the 900s, almost mid 900s. And, you know, there was a stretch there of 3 games where he was 1-2 and he had only allowed 3 goals. He had allowed 1 goal per game. Well, that just tells you, you know, now the St. Louis Blues, while they were having trouble defensively earlier in the year, they had shored that up, but then they just hit a drought of scoring goals. And before last night, they had a stretch of 202 minutes and 48 seconds with 1 goal, and it came from a 19-year-old rookie named Robert Thomas. So, you know, you've got to get some production out of your best players. They were able to do that last night. And, you know, Jake Allen is sort of stabilized, you know, the goaltending position for now. But you'd like to see, you know, a large body of work just because of what you've seen in the last couple of years where he's gone into some stretches where things just haven't gone very well for him. So, but performing well right now, and you guys know as well as I do, you have to live in the moment in this league because things can change from day to day.
Luke Korak is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. We're part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity Winnipeg Jets game day. The Jets and the Blues later tonight, 6 o'clock puck drop from St. Louis. Lou, you know, Vladimir Tarasenko is sort of the big name guy on the Blues when it comes to scoring. I mean, Ryan O'Reilly certainly there now too, and he's got a big name. But, you know, Tarasenko has been a key member of the Blues for so long now. The goals are down so far this year. The assists are actually up a little bit, you know, if you want to extrapolate it over the entire season. Is there any sense of frustration inside the organization with Tarasenko's performance?
I don't think so, because they like the fact that he has added a few more dimensions to his game. I mean, he's been more responsible defensively. He's actually, sacrificing his body. I mean, there was a game against Chicago Blackhawks a couple weeks ago where Patrick Kane's staring in an empty netter and he winds up and rips one, and Tarasenko sacrificing his body to save an empty net goal. Lost a tooth in that game. He's just doing some more things that have sort of been out of his element. Yes, the goal scoring is down, and he's gone 10 straight games without a goal right now, which is very uncommon for him. It's the second longest stretch of his career going back to his rookie year. But he's getting his chances. He had a couple of breakaways, believe it or not, last night. And, you know, you're going up against Pekka Rinne. Pekka Rinne is obviously one of the best, if not the best, going in the NHL. And, I think in just speaking with Craig Berube, I had actually asked him about Tarasenko yesterday during the morning skate. How do you get him going? And, he had offered a few different points, but, you know, the coaching staff is very well aware of what he is doing away from the puck, and they're getting an appreciation of that. And they feel like if you continue to do those things, you're going to get your chances to score. And when the puck is on your stick, maybe shoot it a little quicker. Have guys get to the net a little more and take the goalie's eyes away. You know, just little subtle things like that. All goal scorers go through these things from time to time. As long as he continues to work and do the things that they need him to do, they feel like eventually the puck's going to start going in.
Lou, I wanted to ask you about the Blues defensemen. I always am interested in defensemen, and you know, it's obviously been a really tough year for Jay Bouwmeester. Colton Parayko has been struggling offensively, but is there a reason for optimism the way Vince Dunn and Jordan Schmaltz have been playing?
I think so. There's going to be some growing pains there, but I thought Jordan Schmaltz had a really good game last night, had a really nice setup on the first goal from Ivan Barbashev in the game. It's all a matter with these guys of just shoring things up for them in the defensive zone. Both of these guys have those offensive instincts, especially Vince Dunn. You know, when he jumps up into the play, it's almost like adding an extra forward there. But, you know, if these guys can continue to grow on the defensive end, they're really going to be good players for this organization moving forward. And they're getting Vince Dunn's getting a lot of big minutes. You know, Jordan Schmaltz still earning his ice time. And but the more he continues to play, the more he's getting that ice time. And he's getting a chance right now with Carl Gunnarsson currently shelled with an upper body injury. Robert Bortuzzo's been out since October 20th with a lower body injury. But, you know, once these veterans come back, I think Jordan Schmaltz, the biggest thing with him is he's been able to handle those situations where either they get him in the lineup or he's on the outside looking in. As a young guy, that could be frustrating when you finally think you have a foothold on the in the top six on the team, and then all of a sudden you're one of the spare parts that they use. So I think he's handled it very well. And Vince Dunn continues to mature, and as long as he gets those minutes and he's playing with Alex Pietrangelo right now, you can only get better, and he's really earning his minutes moving forward here.
You know, Lou, I was reading the comments from GM Doug Armstrong from the other day when he was talking about how he had watched the Edmonton-Calgary game from this past weekend, and he saw all the emotion in that game, and he was just feeling that that was lacking in this team. Were you able to see a little bit more of that in last night's game against Nashville, and do you expect a similar kind of contest tonight against the Jets?
Oh, huge. Probably out of all the games they've played in this year, you can just get that sense that, you know, these guys, they brought with them the passion and emotion to the game. And, you know, you could see it right from the drop of the puck when Pat Maroon and Austin Watson go at it. And then, you know, 75 seconds later, in a matter of 75 seconds, I should say, Braden Schenn also goes at it. And this isn't the first time Braden Schenn's done this, where he's tried to, you know, use the fight to kind of spark the team. He did it last year in a game against Colorado Avalanche and Gabriel Landeskog, and they go on and win the game 6-1. So the veterans set the tone there. The young guys really got an appreciation of it. And from a man, anybody that talked last night said you should have seen the bench once Maroon got set the tone there. But that's just the thing, you know. This team has set the blueprint with some impressive wins this year. You go into Toronto and win 4-1. You shut out San Jose at home 4-0. They've had a couple of these benchmark wins. It's just been a problem for them following it up. And I think once these guys realize that if they go out there and they play for each other, that talent, because on paper that talent is there. But I think you've just had too many individual performances where guys start to stray one way and another guy starts to stray the other way. That's where a lot of the mistakes come in. But as long as they play for each other, this should be a very dangerous hockey team.
Lou Korak is the St. Louis Blues correspondent for NHL.com. Lou, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Hey, thank you for having me. It was my pleasure.
Take care, Lou. Thanks again. When we come back, the Jets are a little bit past the quarter mark of the season. We're going to start doing our evaluations. Have players met our expectations, exceeded our expectations, or are they underachieving? That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Jets with a draw. Myers at the point. Waits for it. Lets a slap shot. Go stop. Rebound. They score! Patrick Laine on the doorstep. Bad rebound control by Stalock. Kicked it right out to Laine. An easy right along the ice shot. Winnipeg opens up the scoring. It's 1-0 for the Jets.
Patrick Laine scoring last night in, or yesterday afternoon rather, in St. Paul for the Jets. He opened the scoring to give the Jets a 1-0 lead. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment of the show is brought to you by our good friends Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. It's time to evaluate the Winnipeg Jets at the quarter mark of the season. We're going to hand out evaluations based on the following criteria. If a player exceeds our expectations, they get a plus one. If they meet our expectations, they just get a zero. And if they are underperforming our expectations, they get a minus one. We also want to hear from you on this topic. Send us your tweets. Send us your comments at Illegal Curve. Do it on Twitter. If we like what we read, we'll maybe even read it on air and give you a shout out accordingly. So again, plus one if you meet, if you exceed our expectations, zero for meeting expectations, and a minus one for underperforming expectations.
So it's just the John Ginsburg scale.
So just to give our listeners an example, if you said to Ezzy and I, how do we think of Drew as a host, we would say minus one.
Actually, I get a minus two. I get a really bad evaluation from you guys. You guys add up your minus ones together and I get a minus two as a result. Let's start, of course, we're going to start with the forwards this segment, and it's going to carry on throughout the entirety of the show. Let's start with Blake Wheeler of the Winnipeg Jets, the undisputed captain of the team, the heart and soul of this team. He currently leads the Jets, playing, you know, top line right wing, playing dominant power play. He's got 25 points in 21 games, 3 goals, 22 assists, matching underperforming expectations, Mr. Ginsburg.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's going to say that he's underperforming expectations. I'm going to say that he's matching expectations because my expectations are sky high. I mean, this was a guy that finished top 10 in Hart Trophy voting last year. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think he should have been higher, quite frankly. I think he probably could have been a finalist the way he played. He's on pace for just under 100 points. He could easily surpass last year's career high, Dave. So, like I said, it's matching because, you know, he's been excellent on the power play. He's got 13 assists, many of which are primary assists. He's leading the Jets in points. I mean, he's the driver on a nightly basis along with guys like Mark Scheifele and Kyle Connor. So, you know, meeting expectations, Wheeler has been the team's MVP for me.
Dave Minuk.
I concur with Mr. Ginsburg.
Yes, I agree.
I do think he has met expectations.
That's it? Nothing else to add to it?
No, that's
okay. That's fine.
We got to be concise this segment.
Yeah, we do have some time constraints. Yeah.
We have to
get
through an entire team here, Drew.
Yes, so we don't have to get through the entire team this segment. We're going to just focus, I think, on the top six forwards this segment, and it's going to carry over after Brian Engblom's coming up at the top of the hour. It'll carry over into hour number two and three today. Mark Scheifele, he's, you know, the running mate with Blake Wheeler, top line center for the Winnipeg Jets. You know, he's again having another good year. 23 points, so a couple fewer points than Blake Wheeler. 21 games played, 10 power play points compared to Wheeler's 13 power play points. So a little bit more prolific 5-on-5 for Mark Scheifele. Matching, exceeding, or underperforming your expectations for the Jets number 55?
Yeah, I'm going to say exceeding. And, you know, he's on pace for just under 45 goals right now. He's got 11 in 21 games. And, you know, obviously, you know, Mark Scheifele is a guy that, you know, you expect to have an impact on the game night in and night out. But he's found an extra gear this year. And I think since the preseason, if you guys remember, when Scheifele and Wheeler were clicking with Kyle Connor when he was on the top line there, for me, Scheifele is just so consistent, similar to Blake Wheeler. They drive the bus offensively. You know, Scheifele, I think, has found another gear on the power play. And to me, it's not just the offensive numbers, though. You know, Mark Scheifele, to me, has found another gear on the defensive side of the puck. I mean, he's all over the ice. To me, Mark Scheifele is turning into a Steve Yzerman right before our very eyes. So Scheifele, to me, you could easily say, because the expectations were so high, guys, that you would just say he's met expectations. But he's been even better than I thought he was going to be. Really impressive so far this year.
Dave?
I would say he's met expectations. To be serious, I really think that he's been excellent this season, but you somewhat expect that. I mean, every year you expect Mark Scheifele, being the student of the game that he is, to continue his development. So from my perspective, I mean, it's very hard to exceed high expectations. Mm-hmm. And with players like Wheeler and Shifley, or really anybody in that top six of the Winnipeg Jets, you already have very high expectations coming into every season. So from my perspective, Mark Shifley has definitely met what I expected of him this season.
And Dave, the reason why I probably go exceeding expectations is partly due to the goals, as I mentioned. I mean, he could hit 40 goals this year. He could easily hit 90 points, but it's just the way he's conducting himself. And he seems even more laser-focused than he has been in previous years.
But to Dave's point, I mean, it is when you, I mean, we're talking about the best players on what is expected to be a Stanley Cup contender.
Yep.
So it is really difficult to exceed those expectations. So somebody listening might say, oh, those guys are being pretty harsh. Well, we're not being harsh. We're being, you know, we had these high expectations and these guys have done a very good, just to be able to say that they've matched high expectations is an accomplishment in and of itself.
Right. Shifley and Wheeler rarely have bad games.
It's true. Nikolaj Ehlers is now playing left wing on that top line with Shifley and Wheeler. We know that it was Kyle Connor to start the season, but you know, in the here and the now, we'll say Nikolaj Ehlers certainly got off to a slow start this year as he finally got that goal-scoring monkey off of his back. He's got 10 points now, 5 goals, 5 assists, 10 points in 21 games. Your evaluation, matching, exceeding, or underperforming expectations for Nikolaj Ehlers?
I have to say underperforming expectations simply because you expected, you know, him to have more goals. And I don't think Ehlers has been playing bad, boys. But, you know, it wasn't really until the trip to Finland that I think he's really rediscovered his game. It's really been the last, you know, 10 games or so for me that Ehlers has started to play like the old Ehlers. But 5 goals in 21 games... And again, I'm not saying that he's been playing bad, but I just expected, you know, him to probably have 10 goals at this point in the season. And I do think he's playing his best hockey with Shifley and Wheeler as opposed to that second line with Laine and Little. But, you know, the expectations are very high for Ehlers. I mean, I was expecting a 30-goal, 60, 65-point season out of Ehlers similar to last year. And, you know, so far, the numbers haven't been there. As of late, as I mentioned, he started to put the puck in the net a little bit more. But, you know... I think, you know, the first, 10 to 15 games of the year, we know he was looking for more goals. And so for me, it's really those first 10 to 15 games that I think
are tipping the balance
to a minus one for Ehlers.
Dave?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, he has 1 goal in his first 13, and then he has 4 in his last 8. So if we're just looking at his last 8 games, then, you know, he's been playing well and he's been playing better, and perhaps he'll meet expectations. But again, you know, it's a compliment to suggest that these guys have high expectations of these players. And I agree with Ezzie. Like, Nikolaj Ehlers, he's a guy who you anticipated would take that next step, hit that 30-plus goal mark after, you know, 29 goals last year, 25 goals the year before. So from my perspective, I'm expecting a Nikolaj Ehlers to at least put, you know, 30-plus goals. And right now he's on pace for around 20. So, you know,
And he'll pick that up, Dave. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if he ends up with 25 goals by the time the season is over. I think it's going to be tough for him to hit 30.
Yeah,
but
I agree.
It's really been, you know, remember he scored in the second, he scored that beautiful goal, the game the Jets lost in Finland against Florida, where he got his own rebound. Mm-hmm. And since then, he's got 4 goals in his last 9 games. So prior to that, he only had, as Dave mentioned, 1 in 13.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity, Winnipeg Jets game day on TSN Radio 1290. We're giving our evaluations at the quarter mark of the season for the Winnipeg Jets. We're starting with the forward group. We've done the top line of Wheeler, Shifley, and Ehlers. We want to hear from you on Twitter as well, at Illegal Curve. Who's matching, who's exceeding, and who's underperforming your expectations? We move to what's now on the Jets' second line, Kyle Connor. He played so much of the year at the start with Shifley and Wheeler. He's now playing with Laine and Little. He's third on the Jets in 20 points in 21 games played, 10 goals, 10 assists. Kyle Connor, as a matching, exceeding, or underperforming?
Absolutely exceeding expectations. He gets a plus one. And ask Dave Minuk, who's been following Connor very closely since the Jets drafted him, with all he did in his first year with the University of Michigan and, you know, his first season with the Moose. I've been telling Dave, or anybody who will listen, that Connor has been the Jets' best forward since the preseason. And he has been. And he's elevated his game. And I think it's really telling that Paul Maurice is comfortable taking him off that line when he was dominant on that top line. And he knew that there was a chance that he was able to get Patrick Laine going. And Connor has been fantastic on that second line with Brian Little and Patrick Laine. So for me, Kyle Connor has exceeded expectations, and arguably after Wheeler has been their best forward.
Dave?
Oh, he's absolutely exceeded expectations. And as he's right, I had high expectations from this player. I've watched him from his Michigan days, and you know he was always an excellent player then. I watched him with the Manitoba Moose, an excellent player. But for him to take this next level and become such a driver of the line, and you know it was interesting because a lot of people were saying, oh, well, what's going to happen to him when you take him off the Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler line? And, you know, we saw his game has just continued to develop, and he's just – his forecheck is so aggressive, and he's on those pucks, and his puck pursuit is phenomenal. So, to me, he's absolutely exceeded expectations.
And I think we have to start talking about Connor as a superstar. I mean, if we're talking about Mark Scheifele, Blake Wheeler, Patrick Laine as superstars, Kyle Connor scored 31 goals as a rookie.
He's going to get paid. He's going to get paid a lot of money this offseason.
This isn't just a good player. This is a very good player.
Last one before we have to go to break, and we're, again, going to continue this throughout hours number 2 and 3 on the show today. Patrick Laine. You know, there was a lot of consternation for a long time regarding his goals and how he was scoring them, and he was only becoming a power play specialist. Well, he got another even-strength goal last night for the Jets. He's up to 14 goals on the year right now, 17 points in 21 games. Patrick Laine, how would you evaluate matching, exceeding, or underperforming Ezra?
Yeah, I would say matching expectations, and it has a lot to do with the last 9 games, starting with those games in Finland. If we were doing this after the first, 12 games, I would say that he is not meeting expectations. And, you know, he has really turned his game around, not just on the power play guys. I mean, since Kyle Connor was moved down to that second line, and again, you know, this is kudos to Connor and the way he's played this year. I mean, Laine has really turned it up, and yesterday's goal in the first period, even though I didn't see the goal live, I watched the highlight. I mean, that's a goal scorer's goal. Go to the net, get the rebound, and to me, those are the types of goals, Drew, that Laine has to get. It can't always be on that beautiful one-timer on the power play, right? He's sometimes got to go to the net and get those goals that aren't so pretty, right? Just tap in a rebound. So for me, it's probably based more so on those first 10, 11, 12 games where Laine was really struggling at even strength. Now he's starting to produce at even strength. And mm-hmm. I think it started with being put on that third line with Tanev and Lowry. I really think that rejuvenated his game.
Dave, quickly.
Well, he's met my expectations. Again, you have a player of really high expectations for a young player, and that's something fans sometimes forget, is how young Patrick Laine is. So you got a guy coming into this league, he's still developing, you know, and if you think back to the early days of Alexander Ovechkin, the type of player he was, I think, as he's right, I think, you know, the different line mates for Patrick Laine has helped him. I think that second line is gelling, even though there's some consternation early that they didn't, you know, there wasn't going to be that chemistry. I think now you see what Kyle Connor can do. And it's funny that as he mentions that, because I thought that Laine's goal was very similar to a Kyle Connor, you know, goal where he finds himself into that because he's making smart decisions. He puts himself into the position to be in the right place at the right time to score those goals. So you know, it looks like an easy goal, but at the same time, you have to think intelligently to get to that spot. And I think that's good that Patrick Laine is doing those things.
It's so, anticipation.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, so to me, he's met his expectations, absolutely.
When we come back, we're going to be joined by Brian Engblom to talk about the Tampa Bay Lightning. Much more on our evaluations of the Winnipeg Jets at the quarter mark of the season. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity. Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets. TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
A little past the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to Birchwood Nissan Infinity Winnipeg Jets game day here on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. And of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend Brian Engblom. You know Brian, of course, as an analyst on Tampa Bay Lightning broadcast. Brian, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning. How are you guys?
Doing very well, Brian. How about yourself?
Everything's great. It's a nice, breezy day in Tampa Bay, and just sitting outside enjoying it.
Yeah, well, that sounds like a lovely way to spend.
Yeah, I couldn't resist it, actually.
Yeah, Brian, can we come out and hang out with you?
I could sense sure. The humor in your voice there, Brian, as we were sitting here in -5 Winnipeg.
Yeah.
Okay, so I only have one extra chair, so you guys better hustle.
No problem. We'll be right there. Brian obviously brought you on to talk about the well-oiled machine that is the Tampa Bay Lightning, they lose a guy, they lose an all-star goalie, a Vezina caliber goalie, and Andrei Vasilevsky, and they seem not to skip a beat. You know, this Lightning team, is it just, you know, status quo for them in that they continue to play to the levels that we've now become to expect from them in the regular season?
I would say that's probably the best description. They're a real pressure team, all four lines. The fourth line obviously doesn't have as much skill maybe as the top three, but they play a pounding, aggressive game. The top three lines play a huge puck possession game, and they can forecheck. There's no better forechecking team in the league. I mean, they drive defense crazy. The Chicago Blackhawks defense last night, and they struggle on their own end. In the first period, it was a nightmare for them. And, you know, good on them. Chicago, you know, cleaned some things up in the second and third and shut it down a little bit. But, I mean, it was men against boys in the first period. And I've seen the Lightning do that to almost every team they played for at least a period, where they just run them ragged on their own side of the red line and inside the zone. And when they sense that they're getting to you, they just ramp it up. And the Lightning roll four lines a lot. Like, if you look at Stamkos and Kucherov's numbers for, you know, being top players, and Braden Point, take your pick, they're all down from, you know, 2, 3, 4 minutes, maybe even 5, compared to, you know, some of the other top big names around the league. That's because Cooper, you know, rolls the four lines quite a bit. So, you know, he's not wearing the top guys out by any means. As a matter of fact, I think sometimes they're sitting on the bench kind of rocking back and forth like, hey, we're used to a little bit more of this, you know. But the team's obviously winning a lot, and they can keep the tempo up, and it keeps everybody interested and invested in the game, and it's working for them.
Now, Brian, you mentioned the Lightning are winning a lot of games recently, and that's with Louis Domingue in net. Drew mentioned Andrei Vasilevsky is out of the lineup right now with that injury. Has he exceeded your expectations so far? Because Louis Domingue has never been a number one goaltender at the NHL level.
Yeah, that's true. Well, they had a lot of faith in him. Frangin is the goaltender coach, and he, you know, his background's in the Quebec Hockey League, so he had a connection and knew about Louis. And a year ago, Louis was actually, I mean, you could argue he was the starting goaltender for Arizona. Well, that didn't go too well. 7 games into the season, he was 0-6, and he had a horrible start, and he's the first to say it. I mean, he just couldn't stop the puck anymore. So not only did they not send him down, they just basically cut him away and said, Louis, thanks, but we're done with you. So he was, a year ago, after 7 games into the season, he was taking shots from Shane Doan, retired Shane Doan and Shane Doan's son, just to try to, you know, stay sharp a little bit, was thinking about going to Europe and didn't know what was happening. And then he got a call from the Lightning, and they made a deal, and it, because obviously they were aware of his existence and that he was available, more than available. And I think that had a lot to do with Frangin. Well, they rebuilt him, sent him to Syracuse, and he worked his way up to coming to the team last year and took over for Peter Budaj and did a hell of a job. So they really like him. He's got a terrific disposition, especially for a number two guy. He's not that sort of dark, don't talk to me kind of guy. He's pretty gregarious and open, and I think that's really good for, you know, a second-string goaltender. And so he knows he's going to get a chance to play about 20 games this year. This is obviously before the Vasilevsky injury. Well, it just so happens he's getting a ton of them now right in a row, right? He was looking at 2025. Well, he's played, what, 6 straight, 7 straight. And he's done a really good job. There have been a couple of goals where you go, yeah, you know, maybe that one, that shouldn't have gone in. But he's also made some just outstanding saves. He's got 4 straight games where there's been a breakaway on him, and he's not allowed a goal on any of those breakaways. And they were key times in the game. So Louis has more than done his job, and the players like playing for him.
You know, Brian, 12 days ago, Marty St. Louis was inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame, and on Wednesday night in Tampa, he was honored with a tribute and a ceremonial puck drop. How nice was it for Marty to get in front of the fans and be recognized for his achievement?
Well, it was another one for him because they retired the jersey last year, so we had him around. That was a huge ceremony, of course, last year, and, you know, they had had him out on the ice and had, you know, former players and everything sitting right out on the ice and management. And he spoke for about 20 minutes about his family and his mother and all that. And then, of course, they raised the banner. So that was a very emotional, long ceremony last year. So, it's you know, it wasn't his first time back to Tampa Bay. But having said that, going into the Hall of Fame, last year we, you know, we had that for Dave Andrechuk, and then this year it was Marty St. Louis. So fans are getting kind of used to it. They're kind of liking it too. So you know, it was good. It was a, it's been therapeutic, I think, for Marty because, and for some of the fans, because you know the way it ended here in Tampa. I mean, they loved him, and he won a cup, and he was a major, major contributor for them winning the cup in 04. And then you know when he asked to be traded, and he went on to New York and wanted to be closer to home and all that, there were some fans who were a little bit bitter. I think certainly all of that got patched up. And so, you know, good for him and good for the fans, too.
Brian Engblom is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Brian covers the Tampa Bay Lightning as a television analyst for the team. Brian, you know, Yanni Gourde is one of those great stories in hockey. You know, we just talked about Marty St. Louis. Here's another guy, you know, undrafted, you know, scratches and claws his way to the NHL, and he gets rewarded earlier in the year with a six-year contract extension worth just under $31 million in total. You know, just the story of Yanni Gourde and the ability to find these guys sort of flying under the radar. How much of a testament is that to Steve Yzerman and the scouting staff and now, of course, new general manager Julien Brisebois?
Yeah, all of those people are involved. They've been really good at it. They find guys in the second, third, fourth rounds and undrafted players. And Yanni Gourde is front and center in that department. He had a terrific the last 2 years in the Quebec League. I mean, he was a high scorer. He could really play. And they could see that. The knock on him was he was too small. And still, everybody was looking at bigger players, or most teams were looking at bigger players, and he didn't qualify. And the scouts felt that he hung around the edges too much and didn't get inside, and didn't think it would happen at the pro level. He could get away with it at the Q, but maybe not the pro. So anyway, obviously they were wrong. So he started off playing in the Cow Palace out in San Francisco, and he talks about walking up those stairs, and he said, for every step up and down, I thought about getting to the National Hockey League. Yanni is just a great aw shucks guy, French-Canadian kid. You just love him right away. He's a great kid to talk to. He's got a terrific personality. He was inspired by Marty St. Louis. And, you know, his career path has been just extraordinary. He works his tail off. Finally, when somebody said to him, Yanni, if you don't start getting inside to the tough areas, your career is going to be done. And he all of a sudden, you know, the switch flip, and that's exactly where you find him all the time. He's 3 inches from the blue paint all the time. And he scored 25 goals last year, and nobody even really knew him. So, you know, he kicked the door down from working from the East Coast League to the American League and then being a regular in the American League, gets a chance in the NHL, and just says, I'm not going back. I'm not going back there. I know what it's like there. I kind of like it here. The travel's a lot better. The money's way better and everything else. And he just works hard. He's got a great disposition, loves what he does, can play center or wing. And that's important on this team. They've got about 7 guys who can play center. So he's playing wing all the time. And he can score goals because he said, well, I asked him at training camp, I said, Yanni, you scored 25 last year. Did it shock you? He said, kind of. You know, it kind of crept up on me. So we're so trained to just, you know, one day, one week at a time. And at the end, to go, hey, 25, that's not bad. He said, I think it took me about 3 months to actually beat a goaltender with a shot. The rest of them were from about 8 inches in front of the crease. But you know what? That's the way Yanni plays. He is relentless on the puck, and he's got tremendous speed. And so he turns over a lot of pucks, and he can make a play, too.
Brian, I wanted to ask you a question unrelated to the Tampa Bay Lightning. Don't worry, this is still going to be a hockey question, but I wanted to ask you about one of your former teammates with the Montreal Canadiens, Hall of Fame defenseman Larry Robinson. He was recently added as a coach on Craig Berube's staff with St. Louis. What kind of impact do you think Larry can have on the St. Louis Blues this year?
Tremendous. Larry's really good with you know the position of defense. You ask the people in San Jose whom he worked for I don't know how many years. He was a consultant, you know, at the end, and he'd come in for you know different sessions. And I understand he'd go to their you know American League team and go out on the ice just every once in a while. His last couple of years. But, you know, he watched them all the time, and he'd give advice on who we thought, you know, the best prospects were. But Larry has the offensive and defensive mind of a Hall of Fame defenseman, which is what he is. And he, you know, I talked to him about it, and he said it's kind of interesting to see how programmed the young players are. And he said, when I say things to them, I realize that I have to explain everything in detail about what I want them to do, like all the details. This is where I want you to, I can't just say, well, just make sure you're on the stick side, take them out. You know, this is how you do it. You need leverage here. Make sure, you know, that you don't get caught in a position like this when the puck is over there. I mean, he knows, you know, and he can explain all the details. And the other thing is that because of the player that he was, he has an appreciation for each player having different talents. And that's, you know, the secret to good coaching anyway. I don't care what level it is. You can't tell Brent Burns to play like Dan Girardi. You know, I mean, they're two totally different defensemen. Girardi's old school, forwards, you know, skating forwards and backwards, backing up, classic D-man style. And Brent Burns is anything but. And so you don't want to turn a thoroughbred into a plow horse either, you know, depending on what kind of your style is. Same thing for Eric Carlson, for Victor Hedman, whatever. Larry's really good at seeing, okay, you're a good skater. You can handle the puck. You've got vision. Your best thing is your offense. Go with it. But here's when you should go. Here's when you shouldn't go, which is even more important. Who are you out there against? What's the clock and the score telling you? And all those kind of details, the reminders about that all the time. And Larry will get that message across.
You know, Brian, we've got to ask you about the winning culture in Tampa. I mean, first of all, they've built it at the NHL level, but they've also managed to build it at the AHL level. And consistently, you know, when you see that, it's difficult because, of course, usually when the NHL team is going, you're drawing from the AHL talent. But this is a Syracuse team that manages to win as well. I mean, they've been, you know, first or second the last few years in the North Division. So just how important is it within the franchise to make sure they have a winning culture both at the NHL level and at the AHL level?
Well, it's really important because it has to feed on itself year over year, right? I mean, if you only have, like, if things are going really well at the NHL level for 5-6 years, well, you're losing a lot of guys in today's game at 5 or 6 years. You have to have that feeder, you know, coming in all the time. You have to have new players, especially with the salary cap. You absolutely, it's a necessity. So, and especially now that, you know, the Lightning are at that stage because their top 4, 5, 6 guys are making big cash. And that's not going to change anytime soon. So they're going to have to make some changes. Some guys are going to get swept out, some of the older guys, which means you need young, cheaper talent coming in. There's no doubt about that. Look at Chicago. Chicago's the best example of that. And you know, the Lightning and every other team, Toronto's going to be like that, on and on. So, you know, the culture starts certainly from the ownership. Jeff Vinnick demands excellence, but he's you know, the best owner in sports, we think. People love working for him. Yzerman has done the same job here. Great deal of respect, a great eye for talent. The scouting staff we've already touched on. Julian Breezeball has been there for 8 years with Steve, and he's always been in the room. So now it's just him and Steve. Only it's Julian that makes the final decision on everything, and then Steve will just slide to the side, you know, after this year and do whatever he wants to do. But that sets the table. Then, so the culture is set. Obviously, it's the type of players and the type of coaches. They want to be on the cutting edge. He hired, and Breezeball is one who found John Cooper, actually. And they agree on the style. We want to be aggressive. Look at the teams Yzerman played on in Detroit with the Russian Five and puck possession and everything. He brought that kind of culture and that kind of thinking. Speed, that's why they drafted Braden Points. That's why they, you know, guys signed guys like Tyler Johnson, undrafted Yanni Gord. They don't care about size. They care about hockey sense, speed, and playing the game the way they think it's the right way. And then they get Benoit Gruel, who, I don't know Ben very well. I talked to him at the training camps, and then he's gone quickly to Syracuse. But I asked Julian Breezeball about him, and he said, Ben's really good for the young guys because he's been used to coaching in the Quebec League. And, you know, you have to be father figure, which means a heavy hand, but also kind of nudge them along at the same time. And he said he's really good at that because he's taken kids who are teaching them how to be pros on and off the ice and teaching them a system that the Lightning want to play. So when they get called up, they're ready to go, and they fit right into the system. So it's a top-to-bottom thing.
Brian Engblom is an analyst on Tampa Bay Lightning broadcast. Brian, always appreciate your time and your insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
All right, guys. Great talking to you. Take care.
Likewise, Brian. Take care. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks a lot, Brian.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio. 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Morrissey surveying. Morrissey far side for Ehlers. He moved in. Let a shot go. He scores! Nikolai Ehlers with a snapshot. Rotating off the blue line. It's a power play goal. And Winnipeg leads it 2-0.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity Winnipeg Jets game day. The Jets and the Blues, 6 o'clock tonight on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by Keener Jerseys, specializing in customization services and branded team apparel. Keener Jerseys is changing the game with world-class craftsmanship and unparalleled service. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit KeenerJerseys.com or check out their showroom at 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherbourne. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you.
You know, boys, I'm just looking at some of these pictures from IC photographer Dave Mahousier. That hit that JC LaPon laid on Justin Kluse. Holy smokes.
Yeah, that honestly, it was insane. Yeah. Like he actually had a couple hits in last night's game and a fight, but that hit was And Dave captured it perfectly. I mean, it was just he sent me the pictures, and I was sitting there in the press box.
Like,
and
he went flying.
Oh, yeah, flying. It was unbelievable.
You can check out that photo. I think it's on our Twitter feed. Do we tweet it out? And it's also on our Instagram?
Yeah, for sure on our Instagram.
So check out our Instagram, Instagram.com/IllegalCurve. There's great photography there from both the Jets games and the Moose games. So if you ever want to see, you know, some still photos, you know, captured by professional photographers, check it out on our Instagram, Instagram.com/IllegalCurve.
And if you want to hear from... If you don't get sick of my voice on today's show, you can listen to me at 2 o'clock.
Dave, I never get sick of your voice.
Well, technically, thank you, Ez. And 1:45 is when the pregame show starts.
1:45.
Joining Dan Fink in the box.
That'll be on moosehockey.com this afternoon for the Jets and, pardon me, for the Moose and the Iowa Wild, the rematch.
Drew, on the other hand.
Yeah, everybody's sick of my voice. No doubt about that. My voice is grating, is what I've been told. Thank you very much.
Let's actually find on. It soothing sometimes.
That's good. Let's continue on.
Other times it's like fingers on a chalkboard.
Let's continue on with our evaluation of the Winnipeg Jets.
I guess it's nails on a chalkboard.
Are you done?
Not fingers.
Yeah, it's nails. Are you
done?
Done?
I'm done.
Okay, thank you.
Well, technically the fingers are there.
Are you done now? Let's continue with our evaluation of the Winnipeg Jets forwards at the quarter mark of the season.
It's funny that we're giving grades because Drew's clearly the teacher and we're the two idiots at the back of the class.
Oh yeah, I'm not paying any attention.
You're throwing spitballs with
especially
you guys
with cell phones now. I mean, I'm on Instagram, Twitter.
I feel like Dave is more of a paper airplane type of guy as opposed to the spitballs.
And I shot a spitball or two in my day.
Garden City Collegiate represents.
Yeah, I banged out a few in the old Bic pen.
This is Winnipeg Public High School's finest right here. Not like you went to your fancy little private school.
That's right. Garden City Collegiate. I'm a gopher.
And Ezzy's what's Kelvin? Kelvin is what? The Clippers?
Ezzy's
a proud Clipper.
I'm going to clip you off the show in a second here.
Plus one if the Winnipeg Jets player has exceeded our expectations. They get an even if they've matched our expectations. A minus one if they're underperforming our expectations. We want to hear from you on Twitter at Illegal Curve as well as we continue with this exercise throughout the remainder of the program. Brian Little is where we left off, the second line center for the Winnipeg Jets. 4 goals, 6 assists, 10 points in 21 games for number 18 of the Winnipeg Jets. Matching, exceeding, or underperforming your expectations, Mr. Ginsburg?
Yeah, I'd say matching my expectations. And, you know, sure, maybe you'd like to see a few more goals, a few more assists from Brian Little. But, Drew, he's been that steadying influence on the second line, right? And the big question heading into the season was, is Brian Little going to be the second line center again after the Jets were unable to re-sign Paul Stastny? And we all expected it to be Brian Little. I mean, it's just too early to have Jack Roslovic up there as your second line center. And Adam Lowry is obviously, you know, penciled in there for the foreseeable future as that third line center of the TLC line. So, I mean, Brian Little night in and night out is what you'd expect. I mean, he's responsible in his own zone. You know, he's able to chip in offensively. And like I said, sure, you know, people look at the offensive totals and they say, you know, he's only got 4 goals, but, you know, he's still on pace for, you know, 40 to 45 points. That's exactly where you want him.
David?
Yeah, I'm agreeing with Ezzy. I think he's met my expectations. I think a lot of people also forget that, you know, as a center, you have to sometimes look out for the warts of your line mates, when they're, especially young line mates who are sometimes going to be prone to making errors. So I think Brian Little probably doesn't get enough credit for those things, the defensive things that he does well as a center. So for me, he's met my expectations.
And I think another thing that we have to talk about is, you know, Brian Little for many years was a guy who got more power play time.
Mm-hmm.
And as guys like Kyle Connor and Patrick Laine and Mark Scheifele have obviously improved and passed them on the depth chart, so Little's not a guy that is getting that same first power play time like he used to, right? He gets second power play time, but he doesn't get the first power play time. And that's why I think, you know, his offensive numbers have gone down a little bit. But when you have, you know, 40 goal scorers like Laine and 30 goal scorers like Ehlers and Connor and Wheeler, I mean, he doesn't have to put up 25 goals and 60 points anymore.
Brandon Tanev, continuing on as we talk about matching, exceeding, or underperforming our expectations. The T from the TLC line has 7 points in 21 games for the Winnipeg Jets. We also know, of course, about the role he plays as a shot blocker and on the penalty kill. So Brandon Tanev, matching, exceeding, or underperforming.
Yeah, you mentioned that he's the T from the TLC line. I wouldn't be surprised if his bones are a little bit tender with all the shots that he blocks. But, I mean, for me, he's matched my expectations. I mean, Brandon Tanev, he's an energy player, right, Drew? He goes out there on the penalty kill at 5-on-5. He's able to use that speed, and he gets in there, and he, for the last few years, he's been up at the top of the Jets hits leaders and shot block shot leaders for the Jets. You know, he's exactly what you expect. He's a very dependable two-way player. He chips in a little bit offensively. Would you like to see more goals? Sure, but that's not what he's being paid to do on this team. He's been being paid to be a big part of that checking line for the Jets, and for me, you know, whatever offense he's able to provide, that's just bonus.
Dave?
Yeah, no, he's met my expectations as well.
He's definitely, you guys are hard graders. I mean, I know we don't expect offensively from him, but he certainly is on pace to set offensive career highs for the Winnipeg Jets.
Yep.
Let's move to the centerman of that third line for the Winnipeg Jets. That's Adam Lowry. We, of course, know how important he is to the Winnipeg Jets. He's only got 4 goals and 2 assists for 6 points this year for the Jets, matching, exceeding, underperforming so far through 21 games.
Right, and, you know, we're talking about a quarter of a season, so what's he on pace for, 15 goals?
Adam Lowry?
Yeah.
16.
Adam Lowry would be on pace for a little less than 16 goals.
Yeah,
so 14,
that's what he had last year, right? So, I mean, for me, he's matched expectations. And you could even argue that he's exceeded expectations with what he's done in the faceoff circle. I mean, Adam Lowry has become one of the best faceoff guys in the league. I think he's still top 10 in the NHL for obviously guys that have taken a certain amount of faceoffs. He's what, at 55, 56%?
He is at, I was looking at the wrong thing there. His faceoff winning percentage is at 58%.
Even higher.
Yeah.
That was based on a couple of games.
Pardon me, that's
Dave,
his even strength. He's actually up to 57.2%.
There you go. I mean, that's excellent. I mean, that's elite. To be 57%, we've talked about it. That's Patrice Bergeron, Ryan Getzlaff type of stuff. Jonathan Taves, I mean, that's excellent. So, I mean, I almost want to give him like a plus 0.5. But, I mean, he's exactly what you expect from a center of that third line power forward. You know, he's chipping in some goals every once in a while, Dave. I mean, this is a guy who is so reliable for Paul Maurice.
Fourth overall in the NHL in face-off winning percentage at 57.2%. That's with a minimum of 300 face-offs taken, which is what a lot of those guys have taken that number and higher. So, Ezzy, you said even for Adam Lowry. Dave?
Yeah, I mean, again, the expectations get a little bit higher because, you know, you've got a third-line role now. You're not a fourth-line player. So I'm not saying he's underperformed. I think he's met my expectations.
There you go. So we will come back after this, after Justin Bradford, actually, of Penalty Box Radio, who's going to join us to talk about the Predators. We'll finish up the forward group. We'll still do the defense and the goaltending later on during hour number 2 and 3 on this program. So up next, as I mentioned, Justin Bradford covers the Nashville Predators for Penalty Box Radio. He joins us next. You're listening to Birchwood Nissan Infinity Winnipeg Jets Game Day as part of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.